7. The first morning of the quest was spent mostly in cold, miserable silence. Then, as predicted, they found the remains of another party that had been killed and devoured by wolves. Gary, speaking to nobody in particular, said,
"Look at all this gore. How much time did that turd spend just making this all look as realistic as he could?"
Tyler, who just happened to be standing closest to Philip at the time, said,
"Maybe no time. Maybe he just brought in some people and had the wolves eat them."
Gary gasped.
"It's hard to believe he'd really do that."
Tyler asked,
"What? Kill someone just for effect?"
All four men spent the next several seconds not saying what they were thinking and trying their hardest not to think what they were thinking. As they approached, the corpses faded out of existence, leaving behind pristine weapons, wineskins full of potable water, and folded clothing items. The men picked through the loot with no enthusiasm. The path was narrow, with a sheer drop on one side and a rock wall on the other. The ill-fated party had clearly been attacked by wolves from both sides. Stains on the wall and ground marked the place where they had gone down, but the leavings were scattered along the trail for dozens of feet in both directions. Furs, cloaks, bedrolls, backpacks, swords, shields, and daggers were collected and put into separate piles. Tyler found a pair of leather leggings and a buckskin shirt. Tyler glanced at Jimmy, who, unlike the others, was barefoot and wearing only thin pajamas. Tyler had more reason to hate Jimmy than anyone. Back when Jimmy was still called Merlin and was the chairman of the wizards, he had gotten a terrible idea. Like all truly terrible ideas, it had seemed like a great idea, right up until the moment he told someone else about it. He tried to bring Tyler in on his schemes. When Tyler refused to be a party to it, Jimmy kept him quiet by ghosting him. Tyler spent days invisible, insubstantial, and unable to communicate, which would have been bad enough if he also hadn't spent the entire time experiencing the sensations of starving, dying of thirst, suffocating, and having to go to the bathroom. The whole time he was suffering this, he could see his friends going on about their lives, wondering where he was. He was right there with them, suffering the torments of hell and knowing that it was Jimmy who did it to him. Tyler cleared his throat. Jimmy looked up. Tyler threw him the clothing. Jimmy caught it clumsily. When he saw what he had, his face lit up. He looked back to Tyler and said,
"Thank you."
Tyler scowled and turned his attention away from Jimmy's gratitude and back to the more pleasant topic of corpse robbing. Soon they were on the move again. Philip, Tyler, and Gary wore furs and cloaks over their robes and street clothes. Jimmy wore the breeches and shirt Tyler had found, along with some boots that the former owner no longer needed. All carried swords, shields, and daggers. The backpacks were used to carry the other useful items they'd looted, including a flint. Jimmy's boots were too loose, but he knew better than to complain. Nobody in this group would have much sympathy. They had only been carrying weapons for less than an hour when they got their first opportunity to use them. The path up the mountain remained a narrow track with a sheer rock wall on the left side and a sickening plunge on the right. They rounded a corner and found a large mountain wolf blocking their path. Philip was walking in the lead and stopped in his tracks when he saw the wolf. It had dark gray fur, yellow eyes, and paws the size of catcher's mitts. It was 100 pounds of tense muscle and anger. Their eyes locked for an instant. Then the wolf leapt for Philip's jugular. Luckily, Philip's luck being what it is, Gary was walking behind Philip and was not paying attention. He walked into Philip's back, causing Philip to fall forward unexpectedly onto his hands and knees. Nobody was more surprised than the wolf. Instead of biting Philip's throat, it landed clumsily on his back as he hunched over. Gary let out a startled yelp. The wolf quickly got its footing and leapt off Philip's back, now trying for Gary's throat instead. Gary instinctively shielded his face with his right arm, shrieking as he did so. Gary was grateful for the thick fur-covered hide that took the worst of the wolf's bite. Even with the hide, he felt like his arm was being crushed in a vise. The wolf's weight pulled him forward. Gary kept to his feet. As the wolf continued its vigorous assault on Gary's arm, Philip came to his senses, stood up, and shoved the wolf's rear in the general direction of the cliff. Gary spun to his right, swinging the wolf out over the edge like some deranged carnival ride for animals. Gary barely managed to keep his footing, avoiding being pulled off the cliff to his death. The wolf kept his grip on his arm, so as Gary spun, the wolf swung around and hit a very startled Tyler in the side of the head. Tyler was knocked sideways into the rock wall on his left. The wolf fell to the ground and struggled to regain its footing on the narrow path. It got all four paws underneath it just in time to receive one of Jimmy's two large boots in the side of its head. The wolf rolled sideways off the edge of the path. They watched as the wolf tumbled, then fell, then tumbled some more, then fell some more, then grew too distant to follow. Gary said,
"Wow. Good thing we have these swords."
They hiked in relative silence for the rest of that day. The path remained narrow, precarious, and littered with the occasional angry wolf. After the third wolf blocked their path and attacked Philip, he insisted that it was someone else's turn to lead while he brought up the rear. The next wolf somehow attacked from behind, but by this point Philip had gotten the hang of waiting for them to leap, then pushing them off the cliff while they were in midair. All the others agreed. You wouldn't want to mess with Philip if you were both standing on a cliff. He had become the master of death by shoving. After a day that felt years long, the path widened into a stand of trees inhabiting a relatively horizontal spot on the side of the mountain. They decided to camp for the night. Jimmy was surprisingly adept at building the fire.
"Where'd you learn to do that?" Philip asked.
Jimmy replied,
"I spent 30 years living on a bicycle. It's not like it had a kitchen and central heat."
He made a point of smiling as he said it. They had accepted his apology, but none of the wizards had truly forgiven, and they certainly hadn't forgotten. There were certain things he could never do if he wanted to ever regain their trust, and chief among them was that he could never express any anger over their punishment of him. Philip and Jimmy tended to the fire, or to be more precise, Jimmy tended to the fire and Philip kept an eye on Jimmy. Tyler and Gary fought and killed another wolf, which had slunk out of the underbrush and attacked Gary with no provocation, again, leaping straight at Gary's throat. Gary shielded his face and fell over backward, with the wolf riding him to the ground. While the wolf was distracted, trying to kill Gary, Tyler came from the side and killed it. Tyler shook his head.
"These wolves, they all seem to attack the same way."
Philip said,
"That's because they're all the same wolf. I suspected it on the trail, but now I'm sure. Todd just has one wolf, and he keeps generating it over and over again. They all look exactly the same, are the same size, and attack the same way. They see you, they hunker down, they growl for a three count, and they leap at your head. Then, if you time it right, you can just shove them right off of the mountain."
Gary looked down at the dead wolf and said,
"Ah, cool."
"Yeah."
Tyler agreed.
"Guess we shouldn't let this one go to waste."
Tyler reached down to grab the wolf's carcass and was surprised when his hand went right through it. As they watched, the wolf corpse slowly faded away into nothing, leaving behind a small, wrapped package marked Wolf Jerky.
"Oh yeah," Tyler said. "Todd's a game designer. Of course he'd have the dead wolves dissolve away like the corpses did. We just haven't seen it before because this is the first one we haven't heaved off a cliff." "That's standard in later video games, is it?"
Philip asked.
"In games from my time, when things die, they just kind of explode."
"Yeah," Gary said. "In lots of our games, stuff still explodes, but that doesn't make sense for a sword and sorcery game. It wouldn't seem natural to stab a wolf and have it explode." "But fading out does seem natural?
Jimmy asked. Tyler said, kinda. Not really. Look, the thing is, they learned fairly early on that players enjoy killing stuff, but didn't enjoy being reminded that they had killed stuff. Also, it was easier on the computer if it didn't have to keep drawing all the guys you've killed. Having them disappear frees up the processor to render the stuff you haven't killed yet. Speaking of which, I'm hungry.
Tyler opened the package of wolf jerky and tried a piece.
How is it? Philip asked.
Awful,
Tyler said with his mouth full.
Figures,
Philip said.
Give me some.
Gary asked,
if Todd's trying to punish us, why would he give us food?
Maybe he doesn't want us to starve to death too early into the quest,
Philip said through a mouthful of jerky.
Or maybe he figures making it easy to get something awful to eat will guarantee that we'll eat something awful.
Tyler handed a piece to Gary and another to Jimmy, who looked at it and asked,
what if it's poisoned?
Philip said,
if he were going to poison us, he'd have poisoned the water, or just shot us with a dart. No, this is all about prolonging the suffering.
Jimmy shrugged and bit off a piece of the jerky. Tyler said,
if we get too tired of the jerky, I can try to hunt for something, but I doubt there are any real animals here, so I'm afraid it's the jerky or nothing.
You know how to hunt?
Jimmy asked.
I used to go with my dad,
he explained. Gary said,
I didn't know black guys hunted.
Tyler laughed.
In Montana we do.
The sky grew darker. The fire grew brighter. They sat, and predictably, the conversation turned to Jeff.
Guys,
Gary asked,
what do you think the chances are that Todd was faking us out and Jeff's still alive?
Jimmy said,
low. Pretty much non-existent. I mean, it's possible, but we have to assume he's gone. Even if we think he might be alive, we have to assume he's not. You heard Todd. He killed him to prove a point. It does him no good if he pops up later and says, I was just kidding. Nah, we have to assume that he killed one of us and that he'd be happy to do it again. So, he's really gone?
Gary said. Philip said,
yeah, I'm afraid so. But we have his memory.
Tyler said,
yeah, better than that. We have time travel. We can still go back and save him.
Philip said,
I thought about this. There are ways that might be possible, but they're all dependent on one or all of us surviving, getting away from Todd and getting our powers back.
Jimmy said,
I agree.
Philip said,
I didn't ask.
I know, Jimmy said. Just saying, the way to save Jeff is to save ourselves.
That's convenient for you,
Tyler said. Jimmy smiled, lifted a foot, and pointed to one of the larger blisters his ill-fitting boots had given him.
Tyler,
he said,
there is no part of this situation that I would describe as convenient.
They were all bone-tired and had bellies full of wolf jerky. They'd have loved to have been able to say it tasted like chicken, but it did not. The wolf's final revenge was to make certain that you never forgot that you were eating wolf meat. They slept in shifts, always having one man awake to keep watch. By keep watch, they meant kill wolves. Now that they all understood the timing, it was not that difficult. Spot the wolf, count to three, duck and stab. They had it down to a science, and it was a good thing, because for every wolf they dispatched, a couple of hours later, two wolves would appear. Fighting multiple wolves was not that much harder, because, like ninjas in a bad kung fu movie, they only attacked one at a time, hunkering in a group, looking vicious, but waiting patiently for their turn to growl and leap, while whoever was keeping watch went through the motions, muttering, one, two, three, duck, stab. One, two, three, duck, stab. At dawn, they all awoke just in time to help dispatch 16 wolves, which was difficult even when you knew the secret, just because of the sheer stamina required. The fact that the area around their camp was littered with the jerky pouches left behind by 14 former wolves did not help either. As Tyler finished off the last of the wolves, Gary asked,
"Does this mean that 32 wolves will be chasing us?"
"Duck, stab." "Nah," Tyler said. "I bet they don't travel very far from their spawn point."
"Yeah," Philip said. "At the rate they multiply, we'd be overrun by them before we got to our first task. Now, I think they're just meant to keep us moving, discourage us from staying in one place too long."
Jimmy said,
"Or backtracking."
He looked at the path from which they had come and shuddered.
"I don't envy anyone who has to follow that path after us."